All right, guys, Mike Force Podcast, World War III. What's the plan here? Now look, I don't want to fearmonger here. World War III. Like, you don't have to prepare for World War III to be prepared for World War III. Like, what I mean is, like, if you're prepared, period, you're prepared for World War III. Let me give an example. Like, this Israeli conflict thing. This is a very hot topic, a very significant issue that's going on. This is going to affect a lot of things that happen national security-wise, foreign policy-wise, for the United States of America, no doubt. But will we be fighting a campaign on American soil? Not necessarily. So statistically and most probable, you need to be prepared to fight for that worst case scenario. Because if you're fighting for the worst case or preparing for the worst case, you are set up for success for everything else. So what's the worst case? Well, Israel citizens, who is literally the IDF, the Israeli Defense Force. Everybody in Israel as a country serves in some capacity, has some capability, and they have a large, significant presence protecting themselves. And they weren't prepared. You're looking at 6 to 8 hours of time it took for first responders to get to citizens in villages right outside of Gaza that were initially attacked within minutes in some cases, where over now 1,400 people were killed. What did those people do as a plan? Well, they immediately went down to their safe rooms. Now, most of these safe rooms are reinforced concrete rooms that have doors, including metal locking mechanisms that are reinforced. Reinforced hinges, steel plates covering the bolt mechanism. All of the amenities underground that they would need to survive. And that's the protocol. But mostly that protocol is designed to protect them from rocket attacks, which is their most likely, most probable, most dangerous course of action is what took place. What were they prepared for? They weren't prepared. In fact, many of the people who died, including 60 people in one village, were drug out, burned in, or shot and killed by fragmentation grenades in their rooms because they weren't prepared. They didn't have weapons to protect themselves. They didn't have protocols, including multiple barriers of entry. So this is a significant issue with kind of our culture because we're catering to the most likely course of action, but not necessarily the most dangerous course of action, which is why I wanted to line out this Mike Force podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Black Rifle Coffee Company. Mike Force 20 to save 20% on subs. Appreciate you guys and all the support from Black Rifle. If we look at the situation with preparation in general across the country, it's a stigma associated with paranoia. Like if you're preparing in some way and anybody finds out, hey, did you hear that he's preparing? Then you're that guy. Oh, it's like, dude, Uncle Joe's coming over and you know about Uncle Joe. He's like stockpiling food. That's the problem that exists in our country is the stigmas attached to these specific things like preparing. It's one of the reasons I wrote this book, Prepared. I mean, literally a lot of people have hit me up and not even realized that I wrote a book called Prepared because when you book launch a book, you talk about the book. When you don't book launch, you don't talk about the book. But yeah, I wrote a book called Prepared, a manual for surviving worst case scenarios. Because I wanted to talk to people who weren't necessarily the demographic. Like, I don't know, LDS and Mormon. You prepare because it's part of your culture. If you're a tinfoil hat guy and you live in Baghdad, Arizona, in the middle of a RV in the middle of the desert, yeah, you're prepared. But generally speaking, the rest of the country doesn't even think about it because there's so many stigmas attached to it. They don't want to be associated with the crazy guys, the tinfoil hat guys. The preppers. You know, you don't want to be on that episode of National Geographic where they're talking about you and how crazy you are because you got a couple wives and a lot of food and a lot of guns. Some of the things I'm going to talk about today come from the book Prepared as a reference, just to put that out to you. Also, I know Amazon put it on sale for like $11 for the hard copy, which kind of feels like a ripoff for people who paid $30 for it. But it's on sale. And it's like $5 for the Audible version of that. I would recommend the Audible version. Jack Carr's Ray Porter, who's the voice of Terminalist, who Jack Carr writes the foreword for this book, sets the stage, and I do my own voice over for the actual book itself. But I'm going to take a lot of the highlights from that book, just putting that out there. The link's down below. You could buy that book. Planning. It's the start point in all this. So how do we get started in planning? We have to have a conversation. In special operations, the best way to have a conversation is to do what's called war gaming. War gaming is a conversation of proposing likely actions and then war gaming likely reactions to those actions. So if I say, I'm a bad guy, I have an AK-47. And you say, I'm a good guy, I have an M4. We're going back and forth and weighing how we tackle that problem. So we say, okay, bad guy with AK, good guy with M4. The bad guy is holding a hostage in this specific building. How are we going to attack that problem? Well, I'm going to come in with a helicopter and land on top of the building. When you land on top of the building, because of my tactics, techniques, and procedures, I'm going to blow you up because the entire house is rigged. Oh, well, I'm not going to land on top of it. I'm going to land next to it. Oh, I got a machine gun pointed out the front door. And when you land, I'm going to clack off bombs that are going to explode and going to ambush your helicopter, and then you're going to be in a problem. Oh, maybe I'll land away from the building. Okay, yeah, got nothing for that. So we're developing through Q&A, through a basic conversation, how to develop this. Now, before you can create a plan, you obviously need the end goals and objectives of what's the point of the plan in the first place. Let's break down this a little further. Once we've identified objectives, the objective is, honey, as a family, we need to be prepared as a family for the worst case scenario: government oppression, civil unrest, terrorist attack. Categorically, these three are, generally speaking, have similar characteristics that if you prepare for one, you're kind of preparing for all of them. Generally speaking, there are very specific variables for every instance that I'm talking about, but generally speaking, for example, a surveillance system in your home doing close circuit surveillance of the grounds of the house, right? So this is everything in front, the driveway leading up to, even the entry point before you get into the driveway. That early warning detection system and setting yourself up for any of those three eventualities is actually setting yourself up for anything. An intruder, the Amazon delivery guy, like whatever it is, now you have early warning all the way across the board. So when we break this down, we break down all the different facets that we're trying to prepare for. So I know, like, even just saying that out loud sounds like a daunting task, but it doesn't have to be daunting, guys. You could take one thing at a time. One thing at a time. I like to break it down to the basic necessities in my hierarchy of kind of like modernized needs, right? When we break it down to like the necessities, let's talk about it. Shelter, number one. And I say hierarchy of needs based on modernized needs because they're very different than the hierarchy of needs in a primal or primitive situation. Shelter, you don't need a tarp. You don't need to carry a tarp in your safe room or your vehicle for the shelter that you're gonna need when you're in your home, because the shelter in your home is the home, right? But in self-defense, you would need extra, because the EDC pistol that you carry in your waistband in your vehicle is not gonna suffice in a home defense situation where you're trying to repel an entire team of Hamas, right? So it could be very nuanced, but it could start with the basics. Shelter, we got it, covered. Nothing else to explore. You're in your home, that is your shelter. Water, a slight change. If you're in your home and you have water, for example, how are you getting your water? Is the supply of water coming through a well, a spring? Do you walk out with a pail to go collect water? I mean, if you're in rural parts of the country, some places that are off-grid cabins actually still have that. But if you're tied to city, then that's your water. Do you know in your own city how your community gets its water? Do you know how your community gets electricity, which is another hierarchy of need, right? In a modern world, you wouldn't need that surviving primitively in the wood line, but you sure as hell need it when you're surviving inside of your home, when you have a refrigerator full of elk and deer that is depending on the electricity to keep it preserved for you and your family. So if you're getting that electricity through a hydroelectric dam, or you're getting that water through a reservoir, you need to know that stuff. Because you could play the wargaming in the course of action development and say, all right, honey, so water, what's our water plan? We have 3 gallons of water on the shelf. Okay, what if the water is turned off because we have no electricity? Oh, I have a manual pump. Okay, what if the water infrastructure is compromised? Somebody goes out and poisons the reservoir and you have no water coming into the house. Oh, maybe 3 gallons isn't enough. Maybe we need more water. Yes. Now we're staging the water prepared for the worst case scenario and not, I don't know, the bad storm where we take 3 gallons of water and like, hey man, we survived 12 hours because that's how long the electricity was out. This is the way this works, guys. And you can go down all the hierarchy of needs. Once you cover your basics, food, water, shelter, hygiene, first aid, self-defense or security is one of the most important brackets that we need to pay attention to in preparation and in planning. This is what bit a lot of people in the ass in Israel that claims it's one of the most prepared places in the world via the technology, the preparation of the people and the citizens. How did that work out for them when they gave away their arms to the government and depended on government entities and agencies to rescue them? It didn't work out. They died. 1,400 people died before it was time, or the appropriate amount of time in response was able to respond. It's like the average response time in America, 12 to 15 minutes, like take that by 68 hours. So the question is, if three people, bad guys, wanted to, I don't know, kill you, and they start trying to break in your house, how long can you survive in your house by repelling them with what you have on hand? So your EDC pistol with your 10 to 15 rounds, is that gonna cut it? No. It's one of the reasons, as a Second Amendment advocate, I advocate for AR-15s. Well, you don't need an AR-15. The enemy, the bad guy, the evil, the terrorist, name it, the oppressive government, they have the AR-15. I want an equal playing field here, guys. I want to win. I want the AR, the AK with a 100-round drum, right? I want the stockpile of ammunition. And it's like, oh, this is kind of crazy. No, it's not crazy at all. You're crazy to think that any of these Israelis that were killed, that were in their safe house, in their safe home, were not thinking about, damn it, I wish I had something to defend my life. I read one report where a gentleman saved his wife and his 6 kids by pushing manually on the safe door, holding it in place, while he sucked up with his own body, AK-47 rounds and shrapnel from explosives, from grenades. He literally took it. Thank God he survived. They interviewed him. They didn't really interview him because he was in a really bad state in the hospital, but he did it himself. That was very rare in most cases. In most cases, they didn't survive because they didn't have the capability, because they didn't have the equipment. They didn't have the capacity. Hey guys, if you know Phil Kraft Survival, if you know Mike Force, if you know me, then you likely know about Montana Knife Company. Montana Knife Company was founded by a buddy of mine, Josh Smith, master bladesmith for 30 years. One of the most experienced knife makers in the country. And he's had no compromise and all the integrity, because he's making all of his knives. He's made that decision early on, by the way, to make all of his knives made in the USA, manufactured locally in his home state of Montana. Designed, tested, and built by hunters, Montana Knife Company is a hunting knife company first and foremost. Likely the sharpest knives in the market. I mean, you likely need a bleeding control kit if you're going to own a Montana knife, and that's a good problem to have. They sell out instantaneously. But for the first time in the history of his company, because he's gotten ahead, he has stock of your favorite knives, including the Blackfoot 2.0, the Speed Goat, or the Stonewall Skinner. And you could save 10% by using MF10. That's Mike Foxtrot 10, MF10, for 10% off your first order at MontanaKnifeCompany.com. Let's kind of shift focus from that and talk about how important the next segment is, which is your equipment. You can't plan for the survival or being prepared for the worst case scenario if you don't have the equipment to facilitate that. Now, in my book, I cover several chapters where I talk about intangible versus tangible, where I talk about the intangibles, the situational awareness, decision point, the resilient mindset and planning, these things that you can't put your hands on. But I cover the tangible in three primary categories: EDC, mobility, and homestead. That's how I break out the tangible. Now, EDC, everyday carry. It's what's on your person. One of the most impressive courses I went through in my Central Intelligence Agency career was a survival course. That survival course taught me that in a lot of places in the world, you have to be prepared with what's on your person, your tradecraft, your fieldcraft, and your equipment to be able to survive a window of time, 72 hours mostly, because that's about the time where if you don't have water, you start getting screwed up in the head because you're not cognitive, because your organs and your body and your brain are not functioning normally. So in 72 hours, right now, if I ask you this question, right now, wherever you're at, you're listening to me or you're watching me, you're at work, you're at home, right now for 72 hours, could you survive with what you had on your person, on your body? If I put you in the woods, could you survive? If I put you in the woods on a cold night, could you survive? If I put you in Phoenix, Arizona on a 125-degree day, could you survive? These are things you have to ask yourself, which allow you to make the plan and fill the gaps with equipment in an EDC. Like, I talk about this fanny pack. This is our low-vis fanny pack. We have the kind of high-vis, which is a full size. And then the low-vis is a smaller form factor. Doesn't look military. Doesn't have Molly. This is one of my favorite fanny packs. If I open this, which if you're listening to me, I'm opening up my fanny pack. And I hope you go to YouTube, which is the reason we put this on YouTube and podcast, at Mike Force Podcast, and watch this later. Subscribe, hit the notification tab as well. We'd love seeing new subs. But in the back panel of this side, I have a VS-17 panel, right? This is that fluorescent hunter orange that we use to identify friend from foe. It's the reason I designed it this way, because you could open this up as a chest rig, because you could put it on your chest or your waistband, and you could see that this person has a friendly signal. You can also hold your EDC pistol. This is a SIG 365 macro, X macro, inside of a holster. With a red dot that has 17 plus one round in the chamber. A lot of capacity. But I also have a general purpose pouch up front that has all my first aid, a bleeding control kit, a tourniquet sold at philcraftsurvival.com. That is the extension of my capacity as a person. That is how this works. So the mobility platform, your vehicle, I don't care if it's your Honda Civic, your Toyota 4Runner, whatever you're into, is the extension of your capacity to carry shit. But you have to have the capability by being trained on the equipment that is in that vehicle. Same thing with your home. If I ask you the question, could you survive 72 hours with what's on your person? If the answer is no, well, you got to fill the gap. But if I ask you, could you survive for 72 days with everything that's in your home, or 72 hours with everything that's in your vehicle? Could you? Could you drive for 72 hours straight? No, not on 15 gallons. Do you have an extended fuel tank, extended fuel range? Could you? Could you continue to move off-road at 20 miles an hour with a 75-gallon extra fuel tank from Titan, from Long Range America, that extends your capacity? Guys, I just got this Acerbis 3.2-gallon tank on my KTM 500 EXC5. That's my I take mobility serious. I think it's a cool way to get and recreate outdoors. It's a perfect way to get outdoors. But in building this long-range capability to get away from people and see epic sights, I'm naturally, by default, setting myself up for success for the worst case scenario and bug out. That 3.2 gallons over 2.2 gallons gives me 50 additional miles, which could mean the difference between getting to my next cache with gas or not. So all this equipment is very important as long as you have the capability via the capacity that you're given. In mobility, we teach the Overland Mobility Experience. The next one's in November. Actually, we'll link that link down below for the Mobility Experience. It's one of my favorite courses. We got talent like Kurt Williams who teaches all of Toyota, all of Ford, all about overlanding, off-roading, all the considerations, maintenance, recovery, all the cool things. But it's also a way that you can now build your Go Rig, your mobility Go Rig, to expand your ability to displace from a bad situation. So it's the reason why we develop new pieces of equipment. Right now, currently, I'm developing several pieces of equipment, including a new drawer system, a new 20 and 40 liter mobility bug out loadout system, and a new mobility bag where you can access ready access equipment like life-saving gear, like first aid and survival. I don't care if you get this shit for me. I don't care if you go to Walmart and you make this shit up yourself. I don't care if you hand sew it and you adapt things into your gear. Get a backpack, attach it to the back strap, attach it to, through the back strap, weave it through your headrest, and have the ability to have a backpack full of life-saving gear readily accessible in your vehicle. You don't have food, water, get right. You don't have extended fuel range, get right. You don't have first aid as a staple in your vehicle, which is an extension of your tourniquet, which isn't going to do much for a mass casualty that you come across. In your vehicle, that should be like the ambulance, while my home's the hospital. When I look at my home, man, you got all the capacity in the world. I don't care if you live in an apartment complex in downtown San Francisco. You have the space. Take a slop closet, take the cabinetry underneath the sink in the bathroom and load it out with the appropriate gear that you need. Well, what would I need an expansion of that, Mike? What do you mean? First aid is the perfect example of this. We talk about this in all the courses that we teach, including rewilding when we talk about it. If I have a tourniquet on my person, if I have a first aid kit in my car, well, man, I have all the things that I need to survive long-term in my home. I have a mini hospital. Why would you not have that? I have staple guns for stitching wounds. I have antibiotics that I've stockpiled. I have all the hygiene products because hygiene in the worst case scenario, dude, bacteria will kill you quicker than a Hamas in most situations. I got all the hygiene products available in stockpile where I take all the things up front. That's how I cycle through it. And then when I buy the stuff, I recycle through the back end of it, especially on things that expire. I have medications. And if that is going to expire, I get rid of it, get a new surplus via the 1-2 year expiration, and then replenish it on the backside. I actually don't get rid of any of that stuff because I don't want to get rid of it. Comms, same deal. On your person, what do you got? Well, I got my cell phone. That's a good thing to have. But cell phone infrastructure, like in Lahaina, went down immediately. So what do I have as a backup? Well, in my car, I have ham radio and GMRS. So I can locally communicate and monitor through an RF band the emergency frequencies. Oh, by the way, I just talked to Didi. We will be doing our first ham radio conference that I will be hosting. I am the host of all these conferences. The first ham radio conference is in January. In February, we'll be doing our self-defense conference. And Mike Hernandez, you should be listening to these. I haven't even told you this yet, but we'll be doing an overland mobility conference in March. But if I have ham radio GMRS, what do I have at home? A friggin' base station. That Josh Noss, that ham radio crash course guy, follow his stuff. If at home, you should have a base station with a bigger antenna on your roof. Don't have a tinfoil hat with antenna because it won't work. Have the antenna on your roof and expand your capacity via the equipment that you're given. That's how we start to evolve this thing called preparedness. This thing called preparedness. All right, finally, I'm going to give you a couple pro tips. I'm going to give you a few pro tips, kind of testaments in my own life that I live by when it comes to my individual preparedness. One of the things that I do as a protocol is every single time that I wake up in the morning before I head out for my day, I go through my EDC. People who know me, If you're in a hotel room with me because we're traveling abroad, some of my employees have seen me do this. I do this routinely, especially with my EDC that I put down for the night. Like, I don't have my EDC in my waistband and my pajamas in my bed. I have a SIG 320X Legion with 17 plus, actually 22 rounds, because I have an extended capacity mag with a suppressor, with a light and an infrared laser and a slight of night vision by my bedside. Extreme for you. I don't care. I'm doing me. I'm trying to win. I'm not trying to lose. So my EDC has been away from me. So as a practice, I go through my EDC and I go through every single piece of equipment. I don't apply a tourniquet on me and then do a rehearsal and put it in. Not a bad idea if you're doing foreign travel. But in my routine, I will take my pistol out. I will inspect it and go through a protocol, reposition the gun, and I'm getting a free rehearsal every single time. It's called staging. For a period of time, I had like a mouse pad, where it was like a Philcraft EDC pad, where I had positions like, this is where your keys go, this is where your pistol goes. This is a good battle rhythm in creating a habit that doesn't detract you away from your everyday routines and doesn't make you paranoid because it's part of your habits. Let me show you by demonstration how I would do it with my pistol. Okay, I'm gonna show you step by step how I do it in real time. If you're listening to this, you're just gonna hear it. I encourage you to go to YouTube and watch it. Taking out the magazine, inserting, pushing, and pulling. Turn the gun over, press checking the firearm, seeing the round in the chamber, seeing brass. Letting it go manually, taking my thumb, pushing on the backside of the slide, looking through my optic and presenting it and seeing the red dot. I have the red dot, it's good to go. It's not flashing like it's low on battery and it's set. I take that pistol out, put it inside the retaining band of my EDC, in this case, fanny pack. It could be your holster. Reinserting, making sure it's secure and it's set in the right position. Zipping it up and positioning the zipper, which I like to do it on the right corner as I'm getting to the pistol, because we use these fancy T-handle slots on purpose by design, where I can grossly come down, grab that zipper, and as long as I have a little bit of material in my hand, I could rip through it and pull it to the side to access it with my right hand. My non-firing hand is doing the pull of that zipper. So I'm staging, again, my zippers. Now, I might do that in all of my habits and routines throughout the day. Next pro tip, when I get inside my vehicle, before I walk into my vehicle, especially if it's parked in somewhere where I've left the vehicle behind, I walk at the vehicle in a position where I could see all the doors on my side. Meaning, I don't walk up straight head on in the nose of the vehicle and then walk into the door. I walk at it from an angle where I could see the side of the vehicle to make sure that nobody has, one, broken into the vehicle, damaged the vehicle, and then nobody is in the vicinity of the vehicle prior to me getting into it, especially when I'm loading my kids. Because when I'm loading my kids, you're vulnerable, like at the ATM, the gas station, all the places that you're exploitable. So as I go up to the vehicle, I'm getting situational awareness. Oh, by the way, Yusuf Badu, the situational awareness guy that I quote routinely in my book on the chapter in situational awareness, is doing a portion of our app content to educate you on conscious situational awareness. That's everywhere apps are found, Philcraft Survival. I'll link it down below. So if Yusuf Badu is giving me education on conscious situational awareness in the book, I'm getting pro tips on specific intentional tactics to be more situational aware. And that's key. Because most times we're complacent, not paying attention. That's simply what it is attention. And then that's where we're struck by the bad guys because we're exploitable. So it's not hard to think about. It's like you're inside your vehicle, putting your kid in your kid's seat, buckling them in, your back's exposed. What do you do to negate that? Well, you do situational awareness. You look around prior, making sure there's nobody in the vicinity. And as you're buckling them in, you might look over your right shoulder, right? And you might buckle them in fast and efficiently and get out and then regain situational awareness. So I do this perspective where I walk into the vehicle from a perspective where I could see the vehicle, all the things that are around it. And when I get in the vehicle, if I see anything that's out of pattern, which is what we talk about in the book, if it spikes in my senses, in my pattern, so it's like this is normal and then this is not normal, I pay attention to that. And I don't just pay attention and then write it off. I pay attention and then I do something different. So I go up to the vehicle and I go to open the vehicle and unlock it and it's open. Ho, take a step back. What's going on here? I remember locking the door. So I might take a step back, look inside of it. I might even do a walk around because I'm never going to identify an anomaly and not address it tangibly. It's like that knock in the night, in the middle of the night that you hear downstairs. It's like, what was that? It was something, dummy. Go check it out. But we want to write off everything that's going off in our life. And the bottom line is we're lazy. And we're like, yeah, it was just probably the cat. You don't have a cat. Go check it out. Don't be lazy. Oh, what's that? Sounds like gunshots. Oh, it must be fireworks. It's like September. There's no fireworks. Go check it out. Or make moves. Move the opposite direction. Also, when I get inside, I open the door. When I shut the door, I immediately lock the door. That is a habit and routine. Honestly, the GRS job created that habit for me. Locking the door and unlocking the door manually, because most vehicles do not do it until you either put the vehicle into the start keyed position, like one notch forward, or even starting the vehicle, or even putting the vehicle in drive. Let me say that again. Check your vehicle, because most vehicles, when you open the door, you shut the door, will not lock. If you don't lock it manually, it won't lock. And when you put the key in the ignition, you turn it slightly forward, then it will lock. Some vehicles, all the way to start, then it locks. And some vehicles, all the way to putting it into reverse or drive, then it locks the vehicles. That is the time when you're most exploitable, because bad guys know that. Right when you get in the vehicle or right when you get out of the vehicle, they're going to pounce on you. So as soon as I shut it and I lock it, it buys me time in a circumstance where somebody's trying to exploit me. I also look at my left mirror, I look at my center mirror, and I look at my right mirror. If I have to make changes, I'll make changes, but I'm gaining situational awareness where I lost it when I got in the vehicle. And then I'll go about my day. That, by the way, I lined it out in like 5 minutes. That takes seconds and it's built into my routine. And it doesn't drive me crazy. It doesn't make me feel paranoid. It actually is part of my process. And I gain confidence by doing these things throughout my day. Okay, lastly, the last pro tip I'll give you is like kind of like coming back home. I'm coming back home. Coming back home is where you're most exploitable, especially if you have a garage. Most people's nature is to pull into their driveway, lift the garage, pull into the garage, and shut the garage behind them. That's just normal. Normal patterns, normal routine. Start putting on your situational awareness hat. It kind of looks like this Philcraft hat with tin foil out of it. Just a little tin foil. You like this? You like these threads? This is available in our Philcraft HQ. I don't even know if these things are online, but I like it. We did some private labeling. Anything flannel is cool. Sort of these hats. Philcraft HQ or philcraftsurvival.com. So if I'm putting on my situation awareness hat, that just means put your cell phone down, stop checking your Instagram, stop dancing and listening to music, take a moment to gain situation awareness of what's going on around you prior to you turning down the final legs of, which is a turn, the final legs of your route to your home. So I would say 2 to 3 streets minimum. And those final turns, you need to have your situational awareness hat on. Why? Because most people that want to affect you, especially if they're staying mobile and they want to do something hastily, do it while they're following you. They attack you and then they roll out. So especially if they don't know where you live and they're following your own patterns of life, including your route home. I don't need you to down select 5 alternate routes. I don't need you to offset your vehicle, ride your bike, and then walk into your home. I don't need you to do complex surveillance detection. I need you to look in your mirrors and go, damn, that dude's been behind me. And it's an anomaly because he's been following me every turn and my turn ends in a cul-de-sac and he's still behind me. Why would that matter? Because again, like I said, you've identified somebody potentially is behind you. You don't go into your driveway because that's when you're gonna be boxed in. You continue to move and bypass your home and then work through the problem set. That could be contacting authorities. That can be doing a surveillance detection route, taking multiple turns. That could be going to a major public area. That could be getting your EDC and staging it, whatever it may be. So when you take that final turn into your driveway, instead of opening your garage, pulling inside of your garage and then shutting behind you, I want you to take a different approach. The first thing I want you to do is open your garage and stop in front of your garage. Why would you do that? Because once you pull in your garage, you have nowhere to go. I don't want you to be in a situation where you have to plow, even though I would do it, through the closed garage that you're closing behind you. Because once a person is inside that garage with you, you're in a very difficult circumstance, especially when it's in park and when you're getting out of your vehicle into your garage, right? When you're most exploitable. Wait till the garage fully opens, then assess your surroundings. Do this Yusuf Badu tactic. Look at your fives and 25s, the surrounding area immediately around you, and then all the area when you're looking up in the vicinity around you. This 5 and 25 meters is the analogy. So when that happens and you've assessed that there's nobody behind you, pull into the garage, monitor your rear view mirror, and shut the garage behind you. As simple as that. When the garage is completely shut, after you've monitored your mirrors, then get out of your vehicle. Look, guys, it's going to be hard to set that habit and install it and get used to the protocol, but two or three reps in, you'll be doing this in routine like I do all the time. And I'm not a paranoid prepper, I promise. Guys, this is the first part of a two-part series that we're going to do in preparedness. I'm going to talk specifically about what you could do to be better prepared. I talked a little bit about it up front. We're going to finish this next week in the Mike Force podcast. But I'm going to spend the majority of the next episode answering your questions from this comment section. So if you're in my Patreon group, go ahead and comment. If you're in my, I'll put up a post for that. You could comment in my my Patreon group. That's patreon.com/MikeGlover. Or if you're here on this channel, on Mike Force, ask the questions away. In the second half, I will ask specific questions about preparedness as it relates to everything that we're talking about, preparing for the worst case scenario. Guys, check out Prepared. It's everywhere books are found, a manual for surviving worst case scenarios. I appreciate all the support. I've been in a lot of support. I've been on Fox as a contributor recently. By the time you hear this, I'll be on Fox and Friends, Fox Nation. And then on Monday, I'll be on Harris Faulkner's show. And we'll be talking about the Israeli situation. But I want to say a big shout out to you guys for supporting the channel, subscribing, continuing to follow and track all the things that we're doing. I'm all over Mike Glover Actual doing Prepared. If you haven't watched that show, that's what I do. But also Mike Glover Podcast. I'm committed to this for the long haul. And I appreciate it because I couldn't do it without your support, man. Appreciate you guys. Till next time. Peace out, guys.